This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Kyle Connor cuts to the left with some speed. In on Smith, slows it down, scores! Kyle Connor goes back to the forehand and goes quick, sweet hands of Kyle Connor. The game is on the stick of Patrick Laine. In on Mike Smith, right down Main Street, fire, scores! Patrick Laine, blocker side, and the Winnipeg Jets in an absolute thriller here at Bell MTS Place. The Jets win it by a score of 1-0.
That was back on October 20th. If you remember that game, it was a Sunday evening game. Dennis Bayak with the call. The Jets defeating the Oilers 1-0 in the shootout. Kyle Connor showed off those silky mitts. He showed those off on Tuesday. That was a hell of a goal against the Capitals. And then, of course, Laine putting the cherry on top, beating Mike Smith with the bullet of a shot in the shootout to give the Jets a 1-0 victory. That was the first and only time the Jets have played the Oilers this season.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
Well, it was. I mean, it was a long while ago. It was back, you know, early on in the season. Optimism was sky high. You know, how high were the Jets going to finish in the standings? Now we know that's going to be a struggle, a tooth and nail struggle to get into the playoffs. But the Jets and the Oilers will do battle tonight, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290.
Kyle Connor is going to score 40.
It certainly looks like he might this year. He's very close to, he's certainly on pace for it.
Yeah.
And he's been terrific. I mean, that goal on Tuesday, that breakaway goal on Tuesday, I was watching that and I said, well, he ran himself out of room. And then he somehow managed to tuck it behind Braden Holtby.
I just love, like, the goal Thursday night, like, that was a playmaker's goal. Like, you know, we know Mark Scheifele, the relationship he has with Adam Oates, right? Like, that to me was like, how many guys in the NHL can make that pass?
Well, Scheifele won the puck battle, which was so important. I mean, you know, for Scheifele, for all the slings and arrows that he receives, he's sometimes thought of, he doesn't win enough battles.
Right.
He won that puck battle. Yep. He played with an edge that entire game.
Yes.
And he won the battle. He set up Connor and was on Connor's stick and off Connor's stick so quickly that, you know, Samsonov barely had time to react. And it gave the Jets that huge second goal to give them before they led to the 3-0 victory.
Yeah. And, you know, Ken Wiebe talked about that in the first hour. Like, the Jets are going to need Mark Scheifele to play like that number one center. Obviously, on paper, he's the number one center. But you're talking about, you know, the guy the last couple of years going back, you know, when the Jets went to the Western Conference Final and Scheifele would go head to head with the other team's best line and he would outplay them, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you're talking about Evgeny Kuznetsov. Like, Kuznetsov, because Eakin's line was up against the Backstrom line, right? So I thought that was one of Scheifele's best games of the year. Mm-hmm. And he's playing some really good hockey right now. We know the last couple of weeks he's really putting the puck in the net. He's setting up goals.
Well, since he got reunited with Wheeler, he was struggling. I mean, there was that last week or 2 weeks ago where we did the segment on how many games it had been since Scheifele had last scored a goal, because he was in a significant slump, especially for a guy like Scheifele who counts, you know, considers himself one of the top centermen in the entire NHL and is usually good for a point a game or something along those lines. He'd been really scuffling probably since the end of the player break.
Right. And, you know, we talked about this last segment. I mean, whether or not, you know, Scheifele goes head to head with the Draisaitl line or the McDavid line, because they've split those two guys up. I mean, it doesn't really matter. He's going to have to be excellent tonight. That Edmonton Oilers team is just as desperate as the Jets, right?
Sure.
The Oilers are in third. The Jets are in a wild card spot. But for all intents and purposes, that Western Conference, I was talking to you off air about this, but you've basically
one of the rare times we speak off air, actually.
No, exactly. And you've got basically seven teams competing for four spots, right? Because Vegas right now is in there. So you've got Dallas, Colorado, and St. Louis, along with Vegas, basically, who I think are clinched. Yeah, they haven't clinched, but they basically have.
In my mind,
they've
clinched.
Yeah, because Vegas has got 80 points already, right?
They're six up on Vancouver and Edmonton, and sure, Vancouver and Edmonton have games in hand, but Vancouver loses Markstrom for a few weeks.
Yep.
They're without Besser, we know, for pretty much the rest of the regular season. They got injury troubles in Vancouver. They're not going to catch Vegas. Edmonton, you know, same thing. They're 6 points behind Vegas. They got a couple games in hand. They got some injury troubles. They're not going to catch Vegas. Right now, Vegas is the best team in the Pacific Division. They've won 8 games in a row. They're going to be in town next Friday to meet the Jets. A huge matchup, of course, for playoff positioning and everything else.
Yep. Absolutely. The second place in the Pacific Division is completely up for grabs.
Yes.
Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton. any one of those teams.
I don't think Arizona's in that battle anymore. I think Arizona's in the battle for the wild card spot. They've certainly fallen.
Like,
well, they're 2 points behind Nashville, and Nashville's granted got games in hand. So
no, I'm obviously joking, yeah, but like but at
Arizona's
one point,
Arizona's really struggling.
I mean, it looked like Arizona might win the division at one point.
They acquired Taylor Hall, and then they've just sort of fallen apart since then. I mean, everybody sort of praised them as a key move. That was going to be one of a catalyst for getting the Coyotes back into a playoff spot for the first time in a litany of years. And they just haven't been able to capitalize on that. And so they're certainly scuffling. And it's turned, you're right, it's turned the Pacific Division into, you know, they're sort of on the outside looking in, and it's going to take a pretty Herculean effort on their part to get back into the race in the Pacific Division. Minnesota Wild have been playing great hockey. I mean, they're now only a point behind the Jets and a point behind the Predators, and they have two games in hand on the Jets, and the Predators have a game in hand on the Wild, but the Wild won last night in Columbus handily. You know, what have they won the last two games? 12-1? Granted, one of those
games, they beat Detroit 7-1.
I know, it doesn't really count. It sort of counts. If you beat Detroit, it sort of counts like as a half win, but it doesn't in the standings. And then to go into Columbus last night, you know, the Blue Jackets are desperate. They're right in the battle in the Eastern Conference. That was an impressive performance by the Minnesota Wild. And I think most people thought that when they dismissed Boudreau and they hired Dean Evason, it was almost that they were just going to sort of tread water for in the rest of the regular season.
Well,
they've gone on a run.
Right. Well, not only that, Drew, what they were going to do at the trade deadline by trading Zach Parise, I think would make you think that they were maybe, you know, throwing in the towel on the season. But absolutely, Minnesota just won't go away. It's as simple as that. They won't go away, and we know they have a lot of talent, and you know, we talk about the last couple of games. They've obviously put their stamp on, you know, this run to the last wild card spot, but you can't count them out.
No. You absolutely can't count them out. The way they've been playing right now, they've put themselves right back into the race. It's going to be a fascinating last, you know, 16, 17, 18 games, depending on how many games your team has left. And it's probably going to come right down to the wire. Nobody seems to want to pull away, especially in that Western Conference battle for the final playoff spots. I mean, do you see how Calgary Nashville ended on Thursday night, Ezzy?
I did. I mean, it's incredible. You think about last second goals, but that was last 1/10 of a second goal.
And they only have the opportunity because the puck happens to hit the skate of the linesman, goes right onto the stick of Philip Forsberg, who finds Granlund to bang it in with 1/10 of a second to go, and then they win in overtime. I mean, take away those 2 points from Nashville. It's a clean 2 points for Calgary, if not for an unlucky bounce, and instead the Jets would be in a playoff spot right now. Nashville would be down at 70 points. They'd be behind Minnesota if it wasn't for just a fluke bounce and a clock taking 1/10 of a second less than it could have in any other situation.
Yeah, but from the Jets' point of view, it doesn't really matter because that's one of those games where you can't gain 2 points on either of those teams.
But you don't want it to be a 3-point
game. You can't gain 2 points on both teams.
But before that game started, before that game began, the Jets said, all we want is that to not be a 3-point game. And it was, because, you know, every game in the NHL is practically a 3-point game. The NHL seems to be okay with that for whatever reason. But, you know, that's what the Jets wanted, and they were 1/10 of a second away from it not being a 3-point game.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, yeah, I agree with you, Drew. We're going to talk about this now, but we're not going to be talking about this 3 weeks from now. And one thing that, you know, stood out to me is, you know, David Riddick, we've seen him throw little temper tantrums. I don't know if you guys saw that, you know, on the boards, but, you know, he swung his stick and he almost took out his own player. I don't know who that was on the Flames, but you know, David Riddick has got to be a little bit more careful. I know David Marcoux, who we've had on the show before, former goalie coach of the Flames and the Hurricanes, was really ticked off about it because David Riddick, again, if you haven't seen it, he kind of basically just does the old, you know, goalie paddle smash on the Flames bench on the boards there, and he almost takes out the eye of his teammate. I'll have to go back and look who that was, but I mean, the Flames obviously wanted those 2 points, and I agree. I mean, you wanted one of those two teams to win clean.
It was Johnny Gaudreau. I'm looking at the clip right now. You're right. He takes sort of a two-hander and then he swings the stick back up as the backswing on a golf drive, and he absolutely takes it out on the boards. That happened when he gave up the overtime winner to Mikael Granlund.
Well, and he's done that many times before. I mean, we know that Big Save Dave is an emotional guy, but you know, he's got to get that, you know, reined in a little bit because, you know, the Flames are battling for their playoff lives, and he obviously doesn't want to injure one of his teammates, and obviously, you know, Cam Talbot is going to get some starts as well for the Flames, but just an incredible race for the playoffs. It's incredible in the West. It's incredible in the East. And I mean, that's what you want this time of year, right? Like, you want the Jets to be in the playoff race. You want your team to be in the playoff race. And it probably will come down to that last week.
It'll come down to the last week. And for the Jets, it all keeps going tonight. A 9 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets in Edmonton to face the Oilers. Another must win. And it's almost going to become repetitive, as we say it, basically game in and game out from now until the end of the regular season. It'll all be part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day, 9 o'clock puck drop between the Jets and the Oilers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we recap what was a busy trade deadline day in the Western Conference. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Vegas Golden Knights, they add Alec Martinez. I think they needed that type of defenseman to play between Shea Theodore and Nate Schmidt and the rest of the group. I thought that was a great addition. I love the Robin Leonard, which makes the Cody Eakin trade totally understandable. Now they need to move that money out to get Leonard in. I think that solidifies their goaltending.
TSN hockey analyst Craig Button giving praise to the Vegas Golden Knights as one of his winners as of NHL trade deadline day. That happened, of course, on Monday. The Jets were silent on Monday, didn't make a move. Not a real surprise, I think, given that they'd made the moves earlier to get DeMello, to get Eakin.
I don't understand why teams aren't basically lining up to sign Robin Leonard. And what I mean is, like, I thought the Islanders should have signed Robin Leonard.
I agree with
you. Right? Like, he's a Vezina finalist.
Yeah.
He doesn't win it, but he's a Vezina finalist. Mm-hmm. He was coming back from that, you know, obviously the off-ice stuff with the addiction and mental health and all that. And if I'm Chicago, right, like Stan Bowman and the management, like, are you not signing him to like a 3 or 4 year deal?
I would have, because they don't have anybody. I mean, you can't rely on Corey Crawford. Now, I mean, I suppose it's a possibility that, you know, Crawford, you know, signs a short-term deal and maybe Leonard comes back to Chicago. But I'd be surprised at this point in time. I mean, Robin Leonard, to me, has affirmed himself as a top 10 goalie in the NHL.
No, absolutely. And I don't think there's any chance that the Hawks sign him, Drew, because you're not going to get him for cheaper. If you really wanted him, like, if he was your goalie for long term or medium term, right? Like, so whether that's, you know, 3, 4, 5 years, I don't think they were going to sign him to like a 7 or 8 year deal.
But if Robin Leonard came to you, if you're a team without goaltending options, you know, without somebody clearly ready to step in, and Robin Leonard said to you, 4 years, $20 million.
Right.
$5 million a season. I would do that in a second.
The only thing I can think of is that Stan Bowman looked at his salary cap because they have a few guys, right? Like, you've got Alex DeBrincat, and then you've got, I think, Dylan Strome, who's a pending RFA. Like, you've got some guys that you're going to have to pay. And obviously, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, like, combined make $21 million.
Right.
So obviously, like, the Hawks are going to be a cap team again, and Seabrook's contract is still on the books and so on and so on. But that's the only reason. Like, Robin Leonard, to me, is like a $7, $8 million a year goalie, like, all day long.
And that you could probably get for less.
Yeah.
You know, he's playing at a high level like that, but for whatever reason, he'll probably be able to get him for $5 million a season or $5.5 million a season. It was bizarre to me that when New York let him go, and it was bizarre to me when Chicago traded him. And sure, they get a return for him, but
I didn't think the return was good, Drew.
I didn't think it was an overwhelming Malcolm Subban and a second round pick. Doesn't. You know, turn me on.
And Malcolm Subban is a good backup goalie. Like, to me, like, he can be a backup goalie on most teams, right? Like, he's not, you know, like Yaroslav Halak. Like, he's not an elite backup goalie, but he's serviceable for sure. But to me, that's the return you're getting for a Vezina finalist. Like, you're not talking about just an okay goalie, right? Like, and you know, people are probably going to think that I'm related to Robin Leonard or something. But, like,
are you?
The guy is such a great story. And the thing that I don't get is, didn't you sign him to a 1 year contract at $5 million, thinking if he plays really well, we're going to sign him to 2, 3, 4 years?
That's
right.
That was my logical thought process behind it. I thought it was one of the best free agent signings of the summer, and he's played well on a, you know, an undermanned Chicago Blackhawks team. And then you trade him for a return that I would describe as lukewarm at best. What about the Western Conference trades? I mean, what team did you think really did well? Did you like the Edmonton Oilers
moves? I mean, it's cliche, but I really did like the moves. And obviously, you know, Andreas Athanasiou has the familiarity with Ken Holland going back to Detroit, right?
So does Mike Green.
Right, and Mike Green, you're right. Yeah. And so, you know, Mike Green, it's unfortunate that he's injured, but if the Oilers do get into the playoffs, you know, Green is going to be a player because he's not out for 3 months or anything
He's out for about a month, and he helps. Right. And he helps. I mean, you know what his shortcomings are on the back end, but for a team desperate for defenseman, he's still an NHL defenseman.
Remember the days when Mike Green put up like 30 goals and 80 points? Like
for Washington.
He's not that guy anymore. No. He's a third pairing defenseman. Like the advanced stats say that he's a third pairing defenseman, right? So obviously, you know, that was probably the more minor move, but Athanasiou is a guy that you acquire to give yourself more speed, more skill in your top six, right?
Well, Athanasiou playing with, you know, there's very few guys in the league who can keep up with Connor McDavid.
Yep.
And Athanasiou, I don't know if he can fully keep up with him, but he can certainly skate like the wind. So he's a guy who logically on paper makes sense as a guy who could potentially be play on the wing of McDavid.
And it's not just the speed, right? Like this is a guy who can score goals. Like he can set up goals. Like he's a good solid player. I think most GMs would take him in their top six. I think he would look good on the Jets as well, actually, as we're speaking about it. But so I like that move. Tyler Ennis is basically, you know, making under $1 million, right? Like Ennis is a guy that, yeah, you can put him on your top line, but when you're healthy, most likely, you know, Ennis is a bottom six guy. So I have no problem with that. So when you look at kind of the sum of the parts, right? Like you put all those trades together, the Oilers are right up against the salary cap and they're still able to make some moves. And, you know, that's what I like because at this point they're a buyer.
Ennis has got 15 goals on the year. So for an Oilers team that doesn't have a ton in their bottom six, makes sense. He's a guy who can pop in some offense. He's a guy, I mean, he's not playing a bottom six role right now. He is playing, you know, up on the wing with McDavid for a, what was the cost of a fifth round pick? Ennis makes sense. I mean, everything that Ken Holland did as general manager in Edmonton at the trade deadline was logical. It was not overwhelmingly expensive.
Well, that's, see, you just nailed it, right? Like Ken Holland didn't give up first round picks.
No.
Right? Like, so, If you're Ken Holland, you're saying, well, okay, we're third or second in the Pacific Division. We're most likely going to finish at the very least. We're going to be a wild card team. Obviously, it's not a given, but the way the Coyotes have been playing, the Oilers should get in, right?
I agree with that.
So if you're going to get in, why don't you bolster your top six, right? Mm-hmm. So they, you do that with Athanasiou. You bolster your depth forwards, right? So you bring in Ennis and Mike Green just gives you another NHL defenseman. He's a veteran defenseman who, you know, is a guy that, you know, you could even put out there on the second power play unit. He can play the point, so you don't give up a lot and you make yourself better. Now, do I think the Oilers are a Stanley Cup contender? Absolutely not. Like, to me, they're probably gonna peak at going to the second round. Like, if it's Vegas and Edmonton, I'm taking Vegas.
I would agree with you. I think they're still, Vegas to me is the best team in the Pacific. And, you know, the Leonard acquisition, you know, Nick Cousins is a guy who can contribute. They get him from Montreal for a fourth round pick. Just another guy you can plug into your bottom six. You know, can knows his role, should be able to perform for your franchise when it, you know, when it matters come down the stretch.
The Oilers bottom six has, pardon me, the Oilers bottom six has basically been plug and play for the last 2 years, right? Like, you're talking about guys like Riley Sheahan, Alex Chiasson. I mean, we talked about Tyler Ennis and Nick Cousins. Like, you know, Zhuzhar Kara has been a guy.
Cousins on Vegas, though, of
sorry,
course.
Yeah. Vegas. So, I mean, you're talking about the Oilers really haven't found that right mix yet. So, and these guys aren't going to be here long term, right? So,
what do you think about the fact that in the Central Division, the only team that really did anything was on deadline day, I guess, you know, to be specific, is Colorado in acquiring Namestnikov for a fourth round pick from Ottawa.
Right. I don't mind that trade because, again, you didn't give up a lot to get Namestnikov, and Kadri's injured right now. So Kadri is your second line center. Sure. I mean, Namestnikov, I think when Kadri comes back, he bumps down to the third line center. But, you know, he's kind of an underrated player. When he was on the Lightning, I always liked his game. And, you know, when you talk about Namestnikov,
then he went to the Rangers, then he went to the Senators. He bounced around
a
little
and
bit.
And why would the Senators hang on to Namestnikov? No, it makes no sense, right?
Of course.
So you get some draft picks, and I have no problem with that. And, you know, Colorado, to me, like, when they're healthy, and we haven't seen them completely healthy, right, because Mikko Rantanen's out. Mm-hmm. We talked about Kadri. He's been out for a while. So when they're healthy, they're going to be really dangerous. So if you're Joe Sakic, you had to do something. And, you know, he gets Namestnikov, makes you a little bit better up the middle, and it kind of helps you while you're waiting for Kadri to get healthy. He can play second line center and he can fill that role for you. So, yeah, I mean, that was probably one of the more unheralded moves at the deadline, but I don't think Namestnikov is really going to move the needle much.
Are you surprised that St. Louis and Dallas pretty much stood pat? I mean, sure, St. Louis got Marco Scandella a few days before the deadline, but more or less both those two teams said, you know, we're going to run with the teams that we got.
Well, look at the way they're playing, though, right? Like Dallas, to me, probably is the one team in the Central that's it seems like nobody's really talked about all year long, and they've just been consistently good.
Look at Jamie Benn. The Flyers of the Western Conference.
Yeah, sure. I mean, Ben's playing really good hockey. Joe Pavelski has really turned it up. He wasn't really good in the first half of the season. Mm-hmm. And you look at that defense, right? Like Miro Heiskanen, John Klingberg, like do you really have to go out and acquire a defenseman? Like you're good on defense. Mm-hmm. So maybe you think they might have acquired like a depth forward or something, but you know that third line, Blake Como, Radek Faksa, I think
Cogliano.
Cogliano. I mean, I was watching Dallas the other night, and it's just it's a deep team, right? And again, I don't know if they're going to end up, you know, going on a long, deep playoff run, but they did last year, right? They almost got to the Stanley Cup final last year. So, I mean, why can't they do it again?
I think the Central Division, the top three in the Central Division is going to be an absolute dogfight. Both those three teams, or all of those three teams, there's not a lot separating one from the other.
They were one game away from beating St. Louis, right? So, yeah,
exactly. I should make mention that this segment of the program brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Got to give a shout out to Bernstein's. There was a great article in last Sunday's Winnipeg Free Press outlining the 35 years that Bernstein's has been in business, has been a fixture in Winnipeg, a fixture in the Cordon Village Mall at 1700 Cordon Avenue. So if you haven't checked that out, it was a great article about Bernstein's. And inside that article, a sidebar, as they say in the, in the media business, the origin story of the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
Yeah, with a great quote from a really handsome guy.
Who was that? Was that you? Oh, I must have missed that one. I must have missed that part. But if you haven't checked it out, a great great article about Bernstein's and a great article about the Illegal Curve Sandwich, its origin story. And I've been told that the story for the origin story of the sandwich being optioned into a movie in Hollywood. Your role being played by Zach Galifianakis. Congratulations. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Lance Lisowski of the Buffalo News to talk about the Jets' opponent on Tuesday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
The Jets in Edmonton tonight as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. Then they come home on Tuesday night to face the Buffalo Sabres. We're pleased to welcome to the program Sabres writer for the Buffalo News, Lance Lisowski. Lance, good morning and thanks so much for joining us.
Well, of course. Thanks for having me, guys. Anytime.
Our pleasure. Thank you, Lance. Obviously wanted to talk about the Sabres and they had a very interesting Monday, I would say, with the NHL trade deadline. I don't believe anybody considered the Sabres to really be in the playoff race in the Eastern Conference, yet they were both sort of a buyer and a seller. They acquired Wayne Simmonds from the Devils, and they trade away Evan Rodriguez and Connor Sheary off their roster to the Penguins. So, you know, what was the strategy, I guess, for lack of a better word, for the Sabres with their moves on Monday?
Well, at the time, they were only 6 points out of the playoffs, 6 points behind the Toronto Maple Leafs. If you looked at Toronto at the time, they really didn't have they were looking a little bit rough after losing to a Zamboni driver a few nights earlier. The Florida Panthers were sort of, you know, they traded Vincent Trocheck, which is sort of a strange move from the outside. Of course, it didn't really look like it was working out there for Trocheck under Quinville. So they saw a window opportunity. The Sabres did, of course, and you buy a little bit. You know, you get Wayne Simmonds for a conditional fifth-round draft pick that's going to turn into a fourth as long as he plays 10 games or the Sabres make the playoffs, which is looking increasingly unlikely at this point. And then Connor Sheary was a pending UFA. Evan Rodriguez requested a trade New Year's Eve. You get rid of those two guys. You bring in a guy like Dominic Cahoon, who's 24 years old. He's a pending RFA, so he'll be on the team next year with an interesting skill set. So you know, this is an opportunity for them to get a look at Wayne Simmonds, see if he could be part of the mix for next season. And Cahoon is a guy with a lot of upside that, you know, Botterill and Ralph Kruger like a heck of a lot.
Lance, Jeff Skinner scored his 13th goal last night. Unfortunately, the Sabres didn't get the victory over the Golden Knights. But, you know, how hard has it been for Jeff Skinner? We know that he signed that big contract, 7 years, $9 million AAV. It seems like he's been kind of the whipping boy there in Buffalo. But, you know, how important is it for him to finish the season strong? Because obviously, you know, he was expecting better results.
Absolutely it is. And, I mean, part of it is that he's not playing with even an above-average center at this point. A lot of his time has been with Marcus Johansson, who hadn't played center before this season in 7 years, you know, since he was at the Washington Capitals. So they're not really putting him in a position to get the most out of Jeff Skinner at this point. You know, he isn't playing on the top power play. He's seeing very little time with Jack Eichel. And he suffered an injury late December, and Jeff Skinner is not really accustomed to sitting out games due to an injury. This is a guy who's been healthy for a big chunk of his career, dating back to, you know, his early days in Carolina. So there is a challenge navigating that situation, and he's creating a ton of scoring chances. He did even during that scoring drought that lasted a career high 22 games. The fact is, he's just not finishing a heck of a lot, though. So scores late in that game against Vegas last night, a big step for him, and they need him to finish strong, and he needs to finish strong just to go into the offseason with a lot of confidence. But he's playing really well lately. Last night was probably one of his best games of the season.
Lance Lisowski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Tonight, the Jets and the Oilers as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. And then Tuesday night, the Sabres in town to face the Jets for the second time in about 10 days. And Lance, last Sunday, Jonas Johansson performed very admirably for the Sabres in goal, and Linus Allmark has put up some decent numbers for the Sabres this season. Of course, he's currently on the IR. So let me ask you, is the goaltender that's going to take the Sabres back to the playoffs, the quote-unquote promised land for the Sabres organization, is that goaltender currently on the roster and within the organization?
I think that Linus Allmark certainly has the potential during a two-month span prior to the injury. His save percentage was the third highest in the NHL among qualifying goalies, only behind Vasilevsky and Tristan Jarry in Pittsburgh. He was on a really good path. He was giving them a chance to win every night. The problem for the Sabres during that time was they were dealing with injuries. They were without Jeff Skinner and Victor Olsen during a chunk of those games, which sunk them further down the standings. And their special teams have been really not very good at all this season. Their PK is the worst in the league. You know, power play has been wildly inconsistent. You know, that can really make the difference when you're talking about one goal games this time of year. So Allmark has the potential, and so does Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, who one of the top goalie prospects in the National Hockey League, won a gold medal for Finland at World Juniors last year, underwent hip surgery last April. So his development got stunted slightly based on that procedure. So Allmark's going to be given the opportunity. I don't see Buffalo going out this offseason and making a bold move for a goaltender. I know some people are suggesting that maybe Matt Murray could be a fit based on Botterill's history with Murray in Pittsburgh, but I think they're going to give Linus Allmark every opportunity because he wasn't the problem. And the problem is when he goes down with the injury, Carter Hutton's been really inconsistent. Jonas Johansson's a kid that got called up. He really wasn't ready for the NHL, to be honest. He hadn't really had a lot of games under his belt in the American Hockey League yet, but played really well against Winnipeg, and he's going to be the backup here until Omar comes back, which should be sometime next week.
Is Jason Botterill going to have the opportunity to have another summer to figure out the goaltending issue?
I believe he will. When you look at this team now compared to a year ago, they are remarkably better. You look at just the last two games are a perfect example. They played with Colorado and Vegas for two periods. You know, the Sabres last year under Phil Housley wouldn't have even had a chance to compete with teams like that. They were a disaster defensively. Right now, what the difference is special teams and some of these young players on the roster who are making mistakes in big moments. Victor Olsen failed to cover the front of the net last night against Vegas. Now, Henry Jokiarju has made some mistakes recently, and he's 20, 21 years old. Rasmus Dahlin is only 19 years old. I think a lot of people forget about that. You know, if Botterill was viewed based solely on his tenure in Buffalo, there's one significant mistake, right? It's Ryan O'Reilly. Everybody knows that. You know, he didn't get enough in return for O'Reilly. And a lot of people wanted him to trade Ristolainen last summer. Ristolainen's trade value was shot last summer. So I think now they actually have an opportunity to trade that guy and get something in return that matches equal value. I think you need to give Botterill one more year. I think ownership will give Botterill at least one more year. This is a big summer for the Sabres. I think this team took significant steps forward. I know they're not going to make the playoffs, but their 5-on-5 game improved. That defense core has really, really become impressive based on moves Botterill made. He brings in Colin Miller. He brings in Henry Okiariu and didn't have to part with a significant player on the roster for either guy. So, you know, they dealt with injuries last year. Injuries have been a big part of some of their issues this time around. If they fire Botterill, I think that sets this thing back at least a few more years, to be honest with you.
You know, Lance, you just mentioned the summer, and, you know, we should repeat that the Sabres do have 18 games left in the season, and they're not completely out of the playoff picture, even though, you know, it might be a bit of a long shot at this point. But, you know, when you look at some of the pending RFAs and the UFAs, like I think of Brandon Montour and Victor Olsson, I think you'd agree that those two guys are definitely going to be re-upped. But, you know, when you talk about some of the guys like Michael Frolik or Wayne Simmons, Zemgus Girgensons, players like that, is it safe to say that there is going to be a lot of turnover on that Sabres roster? Maybe not in goal, but, you know, when you look at those forwards, I mean, there could be, you know, four or five forwards that aren't back next year.
I think Botterill would prefer there isn't a ton of turnover. I mean, Johan Larson and Zemgus Girgensons are both pending UFAs. Those are two guys I know Botterill wants back. They really had a really remarkable season. That fourth line for the Sabres has been one of their strengths, and I wouldn't want to part with them. The trick is that both of those guys have been in Buffalo for a few years now. They've witnessed, you know, the lows of the lows. You know, they were part of some of those really difficult losing seasons. Do they want a fresh start? So Botterill has to entice them to come back. I think Frolik and Simmons, this final month of the season, these final 5 weeks, is going to be a nice trial period for both sides to see if, you know, is this going to be a good situation. I don't think Frolik's going to be back. He's really struggled since that trade last month. Simmons, we'll see. I think that there's a skill set there that the Sabres want and that really intrigues Botterill. That's why he went ahead and made the trade. It's one of those that, is he going to be good enough with the puck? He's had some issues with the puck this season. He just hasn't had that scoring touch that he did previously. Montour will be back. That's an RFA. I mean, Botterill gave a lot to get Montour. He's a guy that I think will be part of trade rumors this offseason, because Botterill's probably going to need to go out and get a center, and you're going to have to give up something to get something. Montour and Ristolainen make the most sense on that front. The intriguing one is going to be Sam Reinhart, pending RFA, on pace for a career year. He's really rounded out his game, I think, at this point in his career, which has been impressive. He's been a much more consistent defensive presence. How much are they going to want to pay him? You know, if he's asking for, you know, $8 million a year, which, that's going to be tough to swing for the Sabres after you pay Jack Eichel and you pay Jeff Skinner. So we'll see. I think that one thing that might scare them off in terms of Reiner, that he hasn't produced on a line without Jack Eichel. And you don't want to have too many guys on your roster where that's been the case.
Lance Lisowski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lance covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. The Sabres into Winnipeg on Tuesday night to face the Jets. But before that, of course, tonight, the Jets in Edmonton to face the Oilers as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Lance, you know, our old friend Zach Bogosian, he's no longer a friend of the Buffalo Sabres organization. Was there resentment towards Bogosian for his refusal to report to the AHL?
I don't think so. I think that Botterill had every expectation that Zach Bogosian wasn't going to go to the AHL. They know Bogosian, right? I mean, this is a guy that the first time he's a healthy scratch in his career, he requests a trade. He thinks very highly of himself. He thinks very highly of his skills. They knew that he wasn't going to accept anything less than an assignment to another National Hockey League team. That was a way to really move this thing in the direction of a contract termination. You know, of course, there was an attempt to make a trade, but with his cap hit, both sides knew that wasn't going to happen. The Sabres got what they want, which is more cap space and to just get him out of that room. I know Bogosian's friends with Jack Eichel and a few others, but, you know, when you're trying to change the culture in Buffalo, which is a big part of what's been the problem here, you want people who want to be part of the solution. Bogosian didn't want to be part of the solution anymore. So they moved on. His skill set was diminishing. He doesn't have the mobility he used to. You're already seeing that in Tampa Bay with some of the struggles that he's having in the defensive zone. To be quite frank, I was very surprised when I heard how much interest or reported interest was out there in terms of Bogosian, because when you watched him this season, for the most part, there were some serious struggles without the puck.
Was he a detriment in the Sabres dressing room?
I don't think so. I think that, again, I think what kept Bogosian around was his friendships. I don't think the Sabres wanted to upset Jack Eichel, right? I don't think they wanted to handle this the wrong way. They tried to make it work. they did. You know, they gave Zach Bogosian more opportunities after he requested the trade, and his play was not up to snuff. You know, he's not going to get playing time over some of the other guys on this roster. And that speaks to the moves that Botterill's made over the past year. He's really strengthened that group. Now, Bogosian did have a decent season last year when he was paired with Rasmus Dahlin. So I think a lot of teams out there think that, you know what, maybe in the right pairing, maybe in the right situations, they can get more out of Bogosian, because let's face it, I think that a lot of people think that way in terms of Sabres players and Sabres defensemen being misused over the year. That's why Ristolainen, I think, is viewed as being more valuable than some in Buffalo might think. So, you know, we'll see. Bogosian, I think the hip surgery in April really set him back. I know he actually literally had a setback in the summer that made things, you know, he missed the first 22 games of the season. So he's got a lot to prove, and I'm very curious to see what sort of fit that is going to be in Tampa Bay.
Lance, how testy is that Sabres fan base right now? Because obviously this is a team who hasn't made the playoffs in several years. This is a team that is a long shot at this point to make the playoffs, even though they do still have a mathematical chance. But is there a belief amongst some Sabres fans that they might be wasting Jack Eichel and Rasmus Dahlin's best years?
I think a lot of people think that way. And again, if you just view this situation from now until the beginning of Botterill's tenure, you would have to think that this is on the right track. I think people in the hockey world who study and evaluate talent believe that this is on the right track, but the fan base, they're tired of not being in the playoffs. This franchise had a lot of success for, you know, most of its 50 years of existence, and it's a tough pill to swallow when the fan base was told several years ago to be patient. You know, they're tired of hearing that. And yeah, I can sort of understand that, but you also need to, I think, be realistic and look at where the team is at and how they've taken significant steps forward. Okay. Yes, the Ryan O'Reilly trade set this team back, but you know what? If you didn't, they weren't going anywhere with Ryan O'Reilly, right? I mean, you had to shake things up. That's what Botterill did. It backfired in some ways, but that trade allowed him to acquire a 40 goal scorer. And it's not like Jeff Skinner's only scored in his career when he was with Jack Eichel. It's a guy that 5-on-5 has been one of the best scorers in the NHL since he was drafted by Carolina. So the pieces are there at this point. I think they need another center, absolutely. Dylan Cousins is going to be on this team next year. It's probably unrealistic and unfair to place a top six role on his shoulders, but he's probably going to have that. Casey Mittelstadt will be part of this team next year. Botterill's got to keep his UFAs, the ones that have value, like Jurgensen's and Larson, and make a few more tweaks. But to be honest with you, this team has gotten a lot better the last year. I think that just the fan base, with the history of what's happened in this organization, you know, you can understand the impatience, but it's maybe they'll be convinced that this team finishes strong. I think that's one of the reasons why Botterill goes out and gets Wayne Simmons, to just show people that this is on the right track.
Lance Lisowski covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Buffalo News. Lance, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Great interview. Really terrific.
No, anytime, guys. Talk to you soon, hopefully.
Take care, Lance. Thanks again. When we come back, we look at the trade deadline from the Eastern Conference perspective. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
So Tampa Bay Lightning, I'm including Blake Coleman in the mix for trade deadline day, and they just addressed whatever need they would have. They don't have to look at anybody now, I don't think, in the league and say, okay, I wouldn't want to face them in one of the rounds of the playoffs. And I think this is a team that addressed the exact needs they had. They got grittier sandpaper, harder to play against. Blake Coleman, Barkley Gaudreau certainly is. And then on a waiver pickup, Zach Bogosian is going to give them some depth in the D side.
That's Dave Poulin, TSN hockey analyst, giving praise to the Tampa Bay Lightning for their moves ahead of the NHL trade deadline.
So Tampa Bay
Welcome back to the program. We're going to talk about the moves made by the Eastern Conference teams. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, their final night in town, two comedians for the price of one, Kurt Metzger and Luis Gomez, two headliners, co-headliners, and let me tell you, they've been playing to sold-out shows, so you're going to want to get your tickets and get them now at RumorsComedyClub.com. We heard from Dave Poulin there, Ezzy. talking about how he liked what the Lightning did. To me, giving up a first-round pick for Barclay Goodrow, it was a bit of a curious move. And I know that they get a third-round pick back in exchange for Goodrow. So they're really only moving down. You know, if the Lightning are going to pick at the end of the first round, and the Sharks are going to pick at the start of the third round, you're moving down maybe 30, 40 spots, and that's not a huge number. But to me, that's a lot to give up for Barclay Goodrow.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, at the end of the day, he's an 8-goal scorer this year, right? Like, he's a guy that, sure, maybe he can pop in 12 or 15 goals, but, you know, it's a first-round pick, and you can say whatever you want about it being a late first-round pick, mm-hmm. but David Pastrnak was 25th overall, right? Like, Jack Roslovic was 25th overall. Obviously, you know, Pastrnak is better than Roslovic, but the point is, you can get a really good player late in the first round, especially when it's a deep draft. We keep hearing from scouts mm-hmm. that this 2020 draft is going to be deeper than the last few years, right? So, yeah, I agree with you, but obviously, you know, Julien Brisebois really wanted Barclay Goodrow, right? Like, he saw what he did last year in the playoffs for San Jose, and mm-hmm. you know, he only scored a couple of goals in those 20 games, but he was still a very, very impactful player.
He fits on their bottom six, and he's probably, you know, the kind of guy on your bottom six that's going to go out there and you're going to notice him for all the good reasons. He might not put it up, you know, on the scoreboard, but to me, it's a high price to pay from my perspective for a guy like that who you're not going to see. I don't think he's a huge difference maker. He's a good piece, but to me, he's not a difference maker.
Right. And I think what the Lightning are hoping for is if they win the Stanley Cup, they don't care, right?
Like, oh, sure.
They'll give up a first round pick to get the Stanley Cup. But if the Lightning get out in the first round again, or they get out in the second round, then obviously, you know, it wasn't worth giving up that first round pick. But the Lightning and the Penguins and the Capitals, I mean, these are all win now teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think all of these GMs are looking at their team. And they're saying, okay, we've got Steven Stamkos, we've got Nikita Kucherov, Victor Hedman. I mean, we can go on and on. Braden Point, if you're Julien Brisebois, or you're Jim Rutherford, and you're saying, okay, we've got Crosby, Malkin, Letang. Like, we're not going to try to win the cup 3 years from now.
You're winning it. We're going to try to win it now.
So why don't we go out and acquire Jason Zucker? Like, why don't we go out and acquire Blake Coleman? Like, I think these GMs, I don't mind the aggression, because I think Every team has this window, right? And mm-hmm. I think if you look at the three teams, I should say, that we're talking about here in the Eastern Conference, I think all of these teams' windows are going to probably close in 3 or 4 years. Like, none of these teams are immortal, right? Like, Crosby and Malkin, they'll start to decline eventually. Backstrom, Ovechkin, Kuznetsov, like, they're going to start to decline eventually. So I have no problem with these teams going for it. But yes, going back to the trade, you know, for Barclay Goodrow, absolutely. Giving up a first-round pick is probably too high. But again, you look at JT Miller on Vancouver. Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of, you know, Tampa Bay, I mean, a lot of people thought that was too much to give up. But if you think about it, is Vancouver in a playoff race without JT Miller?
Probably not, no. Fair enough. What about the moves the Carolina Hurricanes made? Because they certainly were, if not the busiest team on trade deadline day, they were one of the busiest. Yeah, they get Vincent Trocheck, yeah. Sammy Vatanen, and Brady Shea.
Yeah, I thought Brady Shea, I thought, was a little bit interesting. Like, you're already really deep on the back end.
Injured, though. Banged up on the back
end. Yeah, but I think you gave up a lot when you talk about the future. Like, when you talk about draft picks, I mean, Carolina is also a win-now team, and Carolina obviously is a team that's battling for that last wild card spot with teams like Columbus, mm-hmm. right, and New York, Rangers, and Islanders. But I wasn't expecting them to be that aggressive. Vincent Trocheck is a great piece. Like, Vincent Trocheck, to me, is a second-line center all day long, and he's an elite second-line center. So I like that move. I just thought maybe they might have given up a little bit too much for Brady Shea, and I'm surprised that the Rangers were so willing to give him up. Like, the Rangers have a lot of talent on the back end, mm-hmm. and I realize maybe, you know, with Jacob Trouba there and Tony DeAngelo there, maybe that makes it a little bit easier.
Adam Fox is also, you know these two teams have done business together for the last little yep. while. Adam Fox was a guy who the Hurricanes drafted who wasn't going to sign with Carolina, and so they traded his rights to the Rangers when he eventually signed. I think what they love about the Shea signing is you have cost certainty for the next 5 years. You know that he's going to be under contract at $5.25 million from the time he's, you know, 25 to the time that he's 30. Whether or not that contract is a good contract or maybe a little bit of an overpay, I think they're willing to overlook, and they think there's still more that Brady Shea has to give.
Right, and I think, you know, Carolina is in the same position as the Jets were for a couple of years, whereas they're willing to give up a first-round pick if they know that there's a good chance they'll go on a long playoff run.
Got to get into the playoffs first. Well, they're not in a playoff spot right now.
If they don't get into the playoffs, then obviously it was a huge mistake, right? And that's why when you go back, and we do this every year, you know, we've been doing this show for 11 years.
God help us.
And we talk about this. I mean, there are only so many winners at the trade deadline, right? Like, you can't have 10 winners. Usually, you only have a few. A couple of years ago, it was the Jets, because the Jets went to the West Final. So you could say...
Because of the guy that they acquired the trade deadline.
I don't care what anybody
Paul
says.
Stastny.
The Jets don't go to the West Final without Paul Stastny.
They don't beat the
Paul
Predators.
Paul Stastny in that Predator series was the best forward on either team, period. So when you talk about, you know, Brady Shea, well, if the Hurricanes end up going to the East Final again, or if they end up going to the Stanley Cup Final, and who knows, even winning it, those bunch of jerks. I mean, obviously, giving up a first round pick, it's going to be a late first round pick, but at the end of the day, you have to make sure that that you're making those moves at the right time, and they end up accomplishing what you want them to accomplish. So I do think the Hurricanes are going to make the playoffs, by the way, but I just think, you know, they did give up a lot when you talk about the future. And, you know, as far as Sammy Vatanen goes, you know, I don't think he moves the needle as much as Shea.
Quickly, J.G. Pageau going from Ottawa to the Islanders, and then the Islanders signing him to a six-year, $30 million contract extension.
Well, and, you know, you got to throw in Andy Green as well. Like, why are they giving up that much for Andy Green?
Well, we talked about that last week, and it didn't make any sense, and it certainly hasn't made any more sense since then.
I mean, J.G. Pageau, apparently there were, you know, as many as six teams after him. It might have been more. Again, I mean, you're giving up a lot when you talk about futures. So, I mean, I'm a little bit surprised that they gave him that much money. Like, I'd be more comfortable with him making around four and a half, as opposed to what he's getting, which is, I think, 5.5, right?
It's 5 a year for the next 6 years.
Right. So, I mean, J.G. Pageau was turning a career shooting percentage into a long-term contract, which is fine. He's a really good hockey player. But again, the Islanders, there's no guarantee they get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So, again, I don't think J.G. Pageau and Andy Green, I don't know if they made any other acquisitions, but I don't think that makes them... I don't think that puts them up there with Washington, Tampa Bay, Boston. So, you know, I didn't hate the moves, but I also didn't love them.
When we come back, Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton is going to join us. We'll talk about the Oilers ahead of the Jets and the Oilers later on tonight, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Dave Jamieson coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets and the Oilers later tonight from the City of Champions. You can hear it live on this station as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to be joined by our colleague from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave Jamieson joins us on the line. Dave, how was the early morning hockey game?
Well, once again, I never fail to disappoint both myself and my teammates. So it was it's fun, but it's never really that good. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you. Who's faster, you or Athanasiou?
Well, I'm flattered that I'm even in the same sentence, but he is decidedly quicker than I am. In my age, I'm just happy I can stay upright and keep moving in a, you know, fairly straight, you know, direction.
We all need goals in life, and that's an admirable goal, and no doubt there, Dave. Obviously, I bring up Athanasiou because Ken Holland acquires him at the trade deadline, along with Mike Green. They get Tyler Ennis from the Ottawa Senators. What were your thoughts on the moves that Ken Holland did to sort of bolster and shore up the Edmonton Oilers forward group and defensive core?
I thought he did a masterful job in getting Athanasiou out of Detroit, not giving up a first rounder, and then also grabbing Ennis for a fifth, and then Mike Green. You know, they offload the Brodziak and a pick, a Brodziak contract and a pick. I thought, you know, listen, I mean, there are a few markets that will claim that they won free agent or a trade deadline. But I think here in Edmonton, Oiler fans feel very good about the moves that Ken Holland made. You know, they didn't see immediate returns in the game in Vegas. That Vegas team looked very good that night, and the Oilers needed, Koskinen was really good in periods two and three, but letting a goal in the first that I think was a bit deflating. All of that said, I think that he went out, didn't forsake much of the future, got some needs dealt with that hopefully is going to carry this team into the playoffs and then maybe a reasonably prolonged run in the postseason.
Dave, Zach Kassian's going to return to the lineup tonight against the Jets after serving that 7-game suspension for kicking Eric Chernak. What are you expecting out of Zach Kassian? Obviously, he is sorry for what he did, and that was his second mm-hmm. suspension of the year. Are you expecting him to go back to playing alongside Connor McDavid, or do you see him maybe going on another line just to start off?
I think it'll be a transition back into the lineup, and the thought is, do you automatically get your place back in the lineup when you sit out 7 games? Not by injury, but by suspension. And it was an undisciplined, selfish move. They were without Connor McDavid. They lost Kassian. They had been, badly beaten up. I know you can relate in Winnipeg about that. But the Kassian suspension was the root. It was caused by selfishness. I think Dave Tippett might just say, look, yeah, it's great you're back, and we were better for having you. Just, we'll work you in. We'll work you in. I mean, what I expect out of Kassian, he'll be very energized. He's had a 7-game break. But you want the best of what he can bring, which is, again, the high intensity. He skates very well. He can, play with the best in the world and has and done quite well. You just want him to play within the constraints of the rules and not put him and the team in a position where maybe they lose him again.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. The Jets and the Oilers later tonight as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Dave, puck drop, game one of the playoffs. Who's in goal for the Oilers?
I'll say Mike Smith, and that's not a bold prediction, but it's the right prediction, I believe. Koskinen, while has been good and at times great this year, I think the goal he gave up to Pacioretty in Vegas, and I know it's a one-off and you shouldn't judge any player, let alone goaltenders, by one goal, but I've just seen too many of those things, those kind of goals where you just go, oh, that was one they need. You needed to make that save there. Smith, for his detractors, and I know there are many because of the way he plays, and it appears to be sort of not on script as goaltenders play in the, in the NHL now. He is almost a throwback, but you know what? He's entertaining as hell, and when he's entertaining and stopping the pucks, I mean, he's not very many times hurt the Oilers this year. He would be my choice. He's got playoff experience, lots of it, and Koskinen does not. And so I think he is the, odds-on favorite to be the starter in the series. Where it goes, I mean, this whole year has been strange because of the goaltending situation, but I think Smith really separated himself.
Dave, just going back to the injuries that you mentioned earlier, what's the latest on Kyler Yamamoto and Chris Russell? Do we know if they're expected to play tonight? And the other players that are injured, obviously we know Mike Green is going to be out a month, yeah. But when you're talking about James Neal and Oscar Klefbom, I mean, how close are those guys to coming back?
Well, that's a great question on Neal. There was some talk that, although it's not come to fruition, that he had a setback. It's a foot injury. Those are obviously, given the nature of the sport, very tricky and very important. So they've gone slow with him. Not to say they haven't missed him, but they've been, enough people have picked up at least some of the slack so that his loss hasn't been as profound. The other thing, Klefbom, that's the critical absence. That's that really, if you'll, given we're talking foot injuries, is the Achilles heel. Like with his injury has forced Nurse to play a lot more than maybe Nurse and the Oilers are comfortable with. But Nurse has jumped up in terms of time on ice previously, and I think largely done okay. He comes under a lot of criticism because his mistakes tend to be a little more glaring than maybe others, but Klefbom is a big loss. Yamamoto was listed week to week. He fell awkwardly and had a player land on him awkwardly, and so he went off, came back, left, or continued playing rather, and then it was sort of they had a couple of days between games, and then it really sort of you know, presented himself an ankle issue. But, you know, he skated. He was walking in the hotel the day after the incident happened. So I think he may be quicker than, you know, people might expect. You know, and as you mentioned, Mike Green, a month, but he's only been here for, you know, 5 minutes. So it's not like that's going to be a profound loss. And Chris Russell, you're talking concussion. And so, you know, it's go slow and, you know, again, maybe not a pressing need to rush him either.
Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave is a host on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. We're talking about the Jets and the Oilers ahead of tonight's contest in Edmonton. It's on TSN Radio 1290 starting shortly after 9 o'clock as part of Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Dave, you have one vote. Who's your MVP, Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl?
Huh. Oh wow!
You're not gonna want to come back on our show anymore. I apologize.
No. I like these sort of back up against the wall, do or die scenarios you guys put me in. You know what? I think that Connor McDavid's the obvious choice, right? Because of all that he does and all who he is, and so on and so forth. But you know, this is Leon Draisaitl has been a absolute horse. He never gets hurt. He produces on an almost nightly basis. But Connor McDavid is the guy who draws the attention, and he should. He draws the attention of fans because of how he plays. And Draisaitl, while dominant and leading the league in scoring, is, I'll say, more subtle. I'll go McDavid because you've asked, but you know, if you phone me later today, I might switch it and go to Draisaitl because he's been that good. Draisaitl has been really quite phenomenal.
You know, Dave, speaking about the Oilers, and, you know, they're obviously a long shot to win the division, even though it still is within reach. But when you talk about, you know, where they're at right now, they obviously just want to get into the playoffs. So whether that's second in the Pacific, third wild card, I don't think they care. And obviously, you know, every NHL team just wants to get in and then, you know, they believe they have a chance to win. But I was going to ask you, what do they have to do to make this a successful season? Like, is just getting into the playoffs successful? Do they have to win a round or two? I mean, it might seem like a pretty obvious question, but it kind of reminds me of a couple of years ago with the Jets where they weren't just happy to get in. They wanted to get to that next level.
Well, you know, it's funny. Ken Holland, before trade deadline and then after trade deadline had closed, said that the team this year has put themselves in this position, and he, Ken Holland, wanted to help. And by help, mean acquiring, you know, the guys who he did. Because he felt that this team had, you know, battled through injury, you know, lost to McDavid for a time, all of the things they've gone through, that he owed it to that group to go out and give them the best opportunity possible to, you know, I'm going to say make the postseason. But look, going into this year, there were a lot of question marks around this team. You didn't know where McDavid was, where he was going to be at with the recovery from that knee injury, because that was kept under, you know, cloak of darkness. You knew you had Draisaitl. You didn't know, you certainly had no idea that Yamamoto was going to be as instrumental to this team as he was ultimately turned out being. And you had questions in goal. You had an aging Mike Smith that, wasn't great in Calgary. And you had Koskinen, who the fans were sort of thinking, you know, why, what, this guy's been anointed the starter. He's barely played in the NHL. You had a lot of question marks going into this year. So for them to be in this position, I think is testament to the work of Dave Tippett, the group themselves, and for them to get to the playoffs, I think would be a huge victory. But now that they're here, now that they're in the position they're in, I think they feel they could quite honestly get a couple of rounds. Maybe they're in the conference championship. Now that may seem from outside the market kind of like, what are you guys smoking? But there is a feeling amongst the fan base and I think the teams that this team is more real than it is an illusion.
Last question for you, Dave. Dave Jamieson is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Darnell Nurse signs that 2-year contract extension about 3 or so weeks ago. It's 2 years, $11.2 million, 5.6 per season. You know, was this the right contract for both Nurse and the Oilers at this point in time?
Yeah, I think it is. This, and not that he needs to be test-driven more, but I think the Oilers will have a much better sense of who Darnell Nurse is is going to be as an NHL defenseman. I mean, he's already logged a lot of games, and he's, you know, and a lot of important time to this point in his career. And you could probably say, well, this is who he's going to be. I think there's more upside in his game. You know, there's a maturation that comes with defensemen that maybe doesn't track forwards necessarily. It's obviously a different position. But, you know, Nurse is, he's a bit of a polarizing figure with fans, and they're not the ones that sign the contract, so I guess, you know, it doesn't really matter what they think. But, you know, he becomes a lightning rod because of the mistakes he makes, because of the chances he takes. You know, I think he's got a very high level of athleticism, and I think that that sometimes gives him the confidence to try things, do things. I think he puts himself out of position more than perhaps his coaches would like. But all of that said, I think the two-year deal is a real nice comfort zone for team and player. And listen, if they get, you know, they're heading towards the second year of it, and it doesn't look like this thing is going to, you know, he would command, I think, a pretty good return if that's the way you want it to go. I think that he should be part of the solution and the group going forward, but, you know, I'm not the GM.
Dave Jamieson, you're our GM. You're our number one draft pick when it comes to talking about the Edmonton Oilers. Dave Jamieson hosts the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, appreciate your time. Go have yourself a post-game beer now that you've finished your time on the ice.
Always good to chat, guys. Thanks for this.
Thanks, Dave. When we come back, one final segment this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Emergency goaltender David Ayers.
Possible that you're now asking him to do this.
I'm in. What a save! Surround him. Number 90 will live on for the Carolina Hurricanes.
I could really watch those highlights really forever.
Were you watching it live?
I was. I mean, yeah, I wasn't.
Same.
You know, I put the kids to bed and I came out and I looked on my phone at social media and I was like, okay, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to sit down and watch the, you know, the Hurricanes and the Leafs, and I see social media is going crazy. So I turn it on and I'm just sitting there and I'm just laughing. I'm just cackling for the entirety of that third period. I mean, yeah, it's Schadenfreude, but I'm not above a little bit of Schadenfreude every now and then. And just to watch what happened and watch how great of a story it is and watch how the Hurricanes, you know, just took the advantage of the opportunity and built upon it and made a sort of a marketing campaign. And then they had the t-shirts out available within seconds, and the money went to the Kidney Foundation.
David Ayers' stick is now in the Hall of Fame.
You know, and the NHL falls ass backwards into the greatest marketing campaign that they could ever get their hands on and the greatest promotion that they could ever get their hands on. I mean, he was everywhere on that Monday, you know, doing every media in the United States that the NHL would kill for them to talk about hockey. I mean, to the Today Show, you know, the ESPN, the Dan Patrick Show, every single, you know, Fox Sports, everything under the sun is talking David Ayers, David Ayers, David Ayers, David Ayers. And it's great because it's also the Leafs getting embarrassed. So that's just doubly adds to the bonus.
Like, Drew, is there any doubt that this is going to be turned into a movie, or at the very least, you know, it's going to be turned into some type of book? And you know what? It's just great. And, you know, as you know, we saw his wife and kids, like, he's just got a great family. It's just, it's an amazing story. It's one of the best stories, not only of the year, but it's just one of the best stories ever. And, you know, when you talk about the emergency goalies, you know, we saw that a couple of years ago in Chicago with Scott Foster.
Sure.
And it's amazing.
Circumstances were different.
Well, and absolutely. And I think the score was 5-2, and it was just different circumstances. And he didn't play as much. But the point is, like,
and the game didn't matter as much because the Jets had already clinched their playoff spot at that point in time.
I remember that Scott Foster still had a big save on Buff. I remember Buff having a point blank chance and Scott Foster making the big save. But you think that this happens all the time because it's happened twice in the last 3 years. But the fact that the GMs are going to be talking about this in Florida is ludicrous to me. Like, if you want to have a full-time emergency backup goalie, I get that. I don't know if that goalie needs to necessarily, you know, travel with the team, and I don't know, you know, if that's going to fit in and everything like that. It seems like this is something that shouldn't be perceived as being a problem.
Not every situation that you could possibly think about needs to have a built-in immediate solution. It's like instant replay. They overdid instant replay because, God forbid, one time a linesman blew a call. And so what happens now is every goal that's scored, you have to hold your breath and wait for 20 seconds to see if there's going to be a challenge on it, because everybody overreacts. Look, this was a great story. It's not like these emergency goaltenders are playing, you know, on a regular basis. They, like you said, Izzy, it's twice in the last like 50 years that an emergency goaltender has played significant time. It doesn't need, there doesn't need to be a resolution. The system that currently is in place is good enough.
And don't you want to see this again? Like, don't you want to see another David Ayers or a Scott Foster? Like, to me, it seems like it's pretty clear, like, the Leafs didn't like it. I don't know if you want to say they were embarrassed.
If the Leafs didn't like it, they should have done something to get some shots on goal.
No, I agree with you.
You know, if the Leafs didn't like it, look, the Leafs didn't match the Hurricanes' desperation. And if they, you know, and had they matched the Hurricanes' desperation, guess what? They probably are able to score goals. That was a, you know, I don't, I'm choking on my rage a little bit, and I'll calm down for a second. But look, it was a great story. The Hurricanes played desperate hockey in front of a guy who shouldn't be in their net. And it happens sometimes because you can't prepare for every circumstance that could possibly come down the road. So instead, the Hurricanes deserve the win. The Leafs deserve the, you know, the to being the butt of a joke for 48 hours. And the NHL should move on and be thankful that they got this great publicity for the 48 or 72 hours, and you move your focus to the upcoming playoff race, and David Ayers is now in the rearview mirror instead of spending time talking about it at the general manager's meetings this week.
Right, and you know, Ray Ferraro, who is obviously, Ray is one of the best analysts in the game. You
he's
know,
the best.
He was the one that suggested having the third goalie, and they're paid a standard league salary. And
I think he even said that they're paid less, like $75,000 for the year or something.
But, well, I think what he meant was like there's a standard set by the league. I don't think he means like
minimum salary,
okay. Right? And then the point was this would eliminate any worries about bias or conflicts of interest, whether it's due to quasi-employment with the team or the collection of Leafs jerseys in the closet, right?
No, so, goaltender in that instance, when they're called to action and they're playing in a situation that they never would normally play, is going to try and throw the game at that point in time. It's just not going to happen. That's it for the Saturday morning and the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thank you to our guests, Lance Lasowski, Dave Jamieson, Michael Trakos, and Ken Weeb. In case you missed any of their appearances, in case you missed any of the program, it's available on tsn1290.ca. It's available on illegalcurve.com. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, subscribe to us. Let us know what you think of the show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show as part of Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.